Hello and welcome to Not If I Reboot You First, a podcast where we take our favorite properties and reboot them before Hollywood has a chance to. It's a little bit akin, you might say, to brainstorming a fanfiction.
I'm Lindsay and I use she, her pronouns.
And I am Tanner, and my pronouns are they, them. And as you can see, the longer I use an accent, the more it strays into something else. So I'm some sort of Cockney werewolf type being. Anyways, Ryan is also here. What are your pronouns, mate?
Well, Tanner, my pronouns are he, him. That's it. That's all.
All right. Now I've got a New Zealand accent, but the reason I'll start with the classy British one is because we're talking about some very fancy music today. It's... Well...
Oh, thank God. Please stop.
It's Fantasia time. You see, now you understand why the only accent I can do reliably is an Appalachian one.
Hi, Indy.
Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Tanner.
What the fuck is your brother doing here?
Hi.
We're talking about Fantasia today, and Ryan is really into classy, classical music, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a wild thing that I did not know about you.
Crazy, right?
Extremely.
Listen, I like music. It doesn't matter what it is.
I also respect your input, because you probably know way more than I do. I'm extremely basic when it comes to classy music. We should throw up a pair of disclaimers here. Number one. We just spent a full hour wrestling with technical difficulties trying to be heard. My computer shut itself down twice.
It don't like you right now.
Clearly. So if we sound exhausted, it's because of that. Number two, we're making a Fantasia, and this assumes that we're in a timeline where Disney, like, makes things for art's sake instead of just trying to eat all your money.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. We had some funny jokes in the first recording that we can't access now because that was one of the first times my computer just decided, hey, fuck you, Tanner.
Well, also my computer was doing a fuck you, Lindsay, as well.
My computer likes me.
Anyway. Fantasia 2020. Well, it's too late for them to get started now. Fantasia, yeah. 2040.
Yeah, because in 2040, it'll be 100 years since the first Fantasia movie came out. Woo!
Another fun joke from the original recording was Lindsay accidentally said Fantasia 4040.
Cyberpunk.
Super good eyesight.
It's when...
Is that good? I don't think that's good. I think you just have zoomed in eyes.
I think it's good eyesight, but I think you need to have more than two eyes.
That's like insect sight.
That's four eyes.
That's the real four eyes.
So, Fantasia 2040, where basically Disney decides, hey, we want to make a Fantasia. We got like a whole bunch of music animators. Here's some blank checks. Fill them in when you're done and have something ready for...
Hand in your homework.
Yeah. Have something ready for 2039.
Yep. Okay, so over the course of the past week, Lindsay sent me some classical tunes for me to listen to, and I did my best to listen to as many as I could.
That's fair.
I have some notes on some of them, the ones that I had ideas for. But Lindsay, since this is technically your topic with a bit of a Ryan side dish, how about you start us off? What number would you want to open up this Fantasia? And keep in mind that traditionally the first number is something a little more simplistic and abstract.
Well, this is actually Ryan's idea. How do you feel about Rush, the band Rush?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
I can't tell because we're in the Discord and there's no facial language or body language for me to go off of to tell who's talking to who.
Would you consider them classical?
I know of the band Rush. They're good Canadian boys.
Yeah.
And one of them sings high. He sings the high notes. But also you sent me a number that it starts off sounding like a Rocky Horror Overture and then just turns into extreme guitar shredding.
Yeah.
All And then I read, okay, so Lindsay sent me the 2112 overture. Maybe we can get a new Fantasia by then. And I'm reading the page for it, and it's like, this is a rock opera. Okay. It's by Rush. Oh, okay. It's inspired by Ayn Rand and objectivism. Oh, no.
Okay, yeah, they kind of got into Ayn Rand and objectivism, but, like, the overture and the Temple of Syrinx is really good.
And then I read further, and whichever frontman was in charge of stuff, he credited Rand in the album notes, and then he removed that credit after he realized that their politics went in completely opposite directions.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. Most of Rand's politics is junk anyway, and I think this one podcaster I listened to, he said that the best thing to do is, like, if you're interested, read one of her books, then take, like, maybe 5% of what she says, integrate that into your life and personal views, and throw everything out.
I also heard it's a thick fucking book, too, so.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, anyway, Ryan was the one who suggested 2112 Overture and Syrinx as our neat opener, our attention-grabbing opener. Ryan, do you want to explain why?
Well, let's look at this more in the historical context of Fantasia. Like, Fantasia 2000, like, it wasn't just orchestral pieces from almost 200 years ago. Like, it was that it also had jazz pieces in it. So why not expand upon that? Like, it's not just a celebration of classical music. It's a celebration of music. So why not include something off the grain a little bit? Something that would catch the attention of a current generation? Of just like, whoa, that's not what I thought was going to happen with an opener.
Well, and also, the original Fantasia was rather contemporary in its choices, too, because The Rite of Spring had only come out, like, 25 years before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who made it was still around to say how much he hated that piece.
Look, it was really controversial, and he kind of got booed out of Paris for it. And also, it was a pain to produce, because the ballerina he wanted to be, like, the main character in it, she got pregnant, so she had to train up someone else to take her place, and
oh shit.
Working with the Nijinskys is a pain in the ass, apparently.
So, visually, what would you want the 2112 overture to look like?
Well, when we were listening to it on YouTube, they set it to, like, the beginning of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I think that's a good visual place to start. Like, the whole, like, going through the light show part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my notes, I put down, because, like, it's a space opera, so I was thinking, like, we start out kind of like the 2001 opener, like, going through hyperspace kind of feel, and it's all, like, visuals, it's really abstract and all that, and then we enter into a strange new galaxy, maybe taking some inspiration from, like, oh, I threw out, like, a Jack Kirby-like galaxy, almost Guardians of the Galaxy-like. That might be a bit too concrete. So maybe a bit like Mobius, who's a bit more surreal in his look, and I am waving my arms right now for no apparent reason.
Yeah, that was kind of the sense I got from that, too. I mean, of course, you sent me the same video, so that's where my mind was going to go.
Uh-huh, of course.
Yeah, I do like that, and I think that is a good opener.
And it would also kind of tie into, if we go to direction, the Ender, kind of like bookend this whole thing with the idea of space. Space, the final frontier.
Okay, do you want to jump right to the end then?
No. We'll save that for the
okay. Do you have a specific order for all of this stuff to go through?
Maybe, but we should also take into account some of Tanner's suggestions, because they've got some burners on. They got some on there.
Well, to be fair, I only thought of, like, actual ideas for the animation for some of them. Other ones were just, hey, these are songs that I know. And also, mine air more towards both a little bit more comedic and a little bit more character-driven. Because my favorite Fantasia is Fantasia 2000, And I think it's a superior one because there's actual plots to all of the pieces.
Okay, fair. Hmm. They gotta think about stuff like that.
Like, in the first Fantasia, Sorcerer's Apprentice had a plot, but everything else was just like, there sure are people here. Like, I think the only other piece that had really good character was Night on Bald Mountain and Dance of the Hours.
I'd argue that Rite of Spring does have a plot, but is the plot
it's
of the death.
It's a nature documentary.
It's a nature documentary. So, like, a plot. The plot is driven by you having an emotional attachment to dinosaurs, which I do. I felt for those dinosaurs.
It used to be my favorite, and then, like, as I grew up, I was like, I actually don't really like this animation or this song.
Huh. Okay. I always thought it was neat. Especially how they portrayed volcanic activity. But I'm also the volcano nerd.
Yeah. So one of the first ideas I had was that, so we have Sorcerer's Apprentice, which has Mickey.
Yeah.
And then Fantasia 2000, we had Pomp and Circumstance that had Donald.
And we agree on that.
So we need a Goofy piece.
Yep.
Well.
So I had two ideas for something that Goofy could be in. And they're both really more connected to Goof Troop itself.
Goof Troop.
Woo! Wait, no, that's DuckTales.
That's DuckTales.
Goof Troop. Ba-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da. Yeah. So you know how in the hall in the Mountain King is in every trailer about like escalating prank wars?
Yeah.
So basically, yeah. So my first idea was in the hall of the Mountain King playing over Goofy and Pete getting into a prank war with each other.
Ooh.
I can see that.
I can already kind of visualize it.
My other idea was taking the William Tell Overture, and specifically the last two movements, because it's got four movements, and I listened to the whole thing, but I remember this the second last and the last one because I did play those in band class at some point, where it's like, the number would start with the dawn movement, which is like, da 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 da. It's like any
the Bambi music.
Basically, it's any orchestral piece that plays over people waking up and like pastoral animals, like, oh, I am awake and the sun is rising.
Yeah.
So we play that over scenes of like Goofy getting up and like looking through family photo albums and making breakfast and like just really nice stuff in the neighborhood. And then it cuts to the bugle going off as it gets to the da da da. And it's Goofy and his wife trying to wrangle the family so that they can go on vacation.
You see, we have a similar idea with a different song, though.
Yeah,
and a different context. But similar idea. Lindsay, take it from here.
It's Blue Danube by Johann Strauss II. And we thought, like, it starts off with Goofy getting Max up to go to school. And then Goofy goes to work. But he has, like, the worst commute ever.
Oh, boy.
It's like driving from San Bernardino to Irvine, California. So you gotta take the interstate and everything. You gotta go through the city.
So you remember the driving instruction videos with Goofy in them?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, we were kind of... When I was showing Ryan kind of, like, what the concept was, I had Blue Danube playing on one tab on YouTube, and then the driving instruction video on the other one. Apparently, Goofy turns into, like, an absolute maniac.
So, maybe less of Goofy looking like the most evil thing in the world, because that would be scary for children, instead, maybe it's more just Goofy being increasingly frustrated. Like, he gets cut off, and then he hits all these red lights, and he has to merge. Just every bad experience you can have while driving, he's going
through
that.
The overly long left-hand turn.
Oh, Lord.
Parking.
We actually asked Ty whether a speeding ticket or a parking ticket is the most bullshit, and Ty said that parking tickets are the most bullshit.
Yeah.
Because at least you have a sense of control over your speed. Parking, it's the Wild West.
It really is.
You never win. You just never win. But I like both of these ideas. Either way, Goofy ends up driving.
Yeah.
Either he's trying to get to the city or get out of the city.
And always something happens. Oh, here's the thing that we didn't talk about that Goofy could encounter. You know, something that we are very aware of here in our fair city. Getting stuck behind a train.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and that can happen. Hell. Hell on earth. That's probably the most frustrating thing. Besides parking, or like parallel parking, that's the most frustrating thing.
Oh, I hate parallel parking. I will park like 3 blocks away from somewhere if I can avoid parallel parking.
I'm with you on that. I don't want to do it. I don't care if anyone says I'm good at it. I don't like doing it. Anyways,
what's next for your guys's?
Well, the way that we had structured it, we had Goofy and Blue Danube as our 5th song. We decided to go with 8.
Okay.
Because the first one had 6, 2000 had 7 pieces, and we thought, hey, this new one, let's have 8. Let's just increase stuff.
Yeah. I was looking at runtimes, though. The first one was 2 hours long, and the second one was only 70 minutes.
Yeah. So here's the key thing that you kind of have to think about with these is finding that perfect middle ground.
Yeah.
Or you could just say, in the theoretical sense, fuck it, everyone's just gonna watch this. No matter what, we strap them to their seats.
I mean, another thing I was thinking at some point this week is that Disney Plus, yes, it's a testament to all of our sins and I want to see it fail, but also, it would be a great platform for them to release, like, episodic Fantasia pieces.
Ooh, yeah. And then they could do longer pieces as well.
Yeah, instead of doing a full feature film, it's just every week, here's a 12-minute piece set to a 12-minute song.
And it kind of goes with what Walt Disney had visualized for the first Fantasia. It was supposed to be a road show, so over time there would be new stuff added, stuff taken out. You'd sometimes get some classics, you would get some new stuff, and it would go from place to place to place, like how the old films used to work. Now, film distribution doesn't work like that anymore, but it would be perfect on a streaming platform.
Yeah.
At the same time, I would also like to see some of these like on a big screen.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does have like it should also be structured as like the night at the opera for the kids kind of deal.
At the opera like, tonight.
It is a really cool idea that could absolutely work as a just every now and then you just get a new episode of Fantasia. Just a new piece every so often. Also, another thing that we talked about, and this is more on the production animation side, is that in this idealistic world where Disney's doing this for the artistic merit instead of the money, we also thought of like contracting out pieces to other studios. So,
I suggested something for Claymation.
So, I know for specifically the 2112, I brought up the idea of contracting out Katsuhiro Otomo, aka the creator of Akira.
Oh, yeah.
So, probably to partner with like Toei and just like, here's a blank Disney money. Go crazy.
You can now create all of the Gundam.
Just create your space, whatever. Go hard. I also thought of like a stop mo, like yeah, like a stop motion segment, maybe with Laika and director Travis Knight.
Oh yeah, that would also be really good.
I don't know what piece though.
Well, maybe we'll figure it out as we move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have a comedic, goofy one, like Blue Danube, Hollow the Mountain King, or William Tell could work for any of those.
I had two comedic ones, but I'll let you guys say another one of your pieces before I go to another one of mine.
So how about we talk about Symphony No. 4 from the New World by Dvorak?
Ah, the brows held high theme.
I think it's used by everybody who wants to be classy.
I use that on Legend of the Galactic Novices.
Isn't it used on I Will Fight You?
I think so. And also it's used in Legend of the Galactic Heroes, so.
Oh, wow. So, our general idea, like, from the New World, taking it just from the title, like, my initial thought was, like, hey, let's do something, like, about an island being formed. Like, oh, what was that island off of Iceland? Surtsey. That basically, like, it erupted one day, and all of a sudden, Iceland's got a new island.
Oh, yeah.
And then it kind of turned into, like, two creation gods fighting over how to create stuff. One is more practical and pragmatic, and the other is a bit more whimsy based.
Okay. It's like, I'm gonna make a dragon. No, we're gonna make that a Komodo dragon.
So it's another one of those escalation things.
Yeah, I really like that idea.
Because, like, that could also be a comedic thing of, like, the one god's trying to make all these, like, mythical creatures. And that's where we get these legends and stuff, and myths and stuff. But the other one's like, no, we have to make this, like, practical. Like, no one's gonna believe a dragon or something. I'm trying to fool the world. and maybe, like, they agree on some stuff, like, yeah, platypus, that can exist. Or, that's weird.
Or the whimsical one just kind of sneaks platypus in before the first one can do anything about it.
Yeah. It actually just straight up made Australia just this kind of weird spot. Oh, the practical one just makes, here's a landmass, just go crazy. It's like, okay. Platypus. What is it? I don't know.
Yeah, apparently guys from Australia had to bring a live one to Britain to prove that it wasn't a fake. Because someone had brought, like, a stop platypus back to Britain when they were first exploring Australia. And they're like, that, no, that is not a thing. And then they're like, fine.
That is taxonomically improbable.
Yeah. So yeah, that was our main idea for From the New World. Tanner, you got another one?
So my next one, actually, I think most of mine are comedic. So I listened through most of all four of the Four Seasons by Vivaldi.
Okay.
So the thing about those ones, they're all very good. But Autumn kind of stays the same all the way through. And then the issue I had with Summer and Winter in terms of taking them and using them for an animated piece is that they both end on kind of downer notes.
Mm, yeah.
Just sonically. So the only one that stays pretty, like, light and happier throughout is Spring. But yeah. Spring's also kind of samey throughout as well. And then I found out that Vivaldi's Spring is, for 15 years, has been just the public domain hold music for almost every company that puts you on hold.
Jesus.
So my idea is an office worker who, like, comes into the office and they're having computer troubles, and so they're calling IT and they're put on hold, and then just the whole thing is them trying to amuse themselves, and, like, but they can't go away from their computer because they're on hold.
So they're doing stuff around their desk.
Pretty much, and the whole thing is just the soundtrack, the dissonance between the light and cheery spring movement and this business person just absolutely going stir crazy in their cubicle.
With me on a work day.
They're shooting staples at the corner trying to hit something.
Then they hit a coworker and they have to pretend they're not doing anything.
That's really good.
It's nice. It's simple. It's almost like, in my mind, I see it kind of animated like the Paper Plane short.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's that guy, too.
It could be that guy.
Oh, my goodness. That poor man.
Like, yeah, he's got a great girlfriend, but oh, God, I'm on hold. Ah.
Yeah, that's pretty much the premise for Vivaldi's Spring.
Okay. So there's this one piece by a guy called Aaron Copland, called Rodeo Four Dance Episode. And
oh, that was the Yeehaw song.
Yeah.
It is the Yeehaw song.
It's basically the basis for all Western music ever. In Western, I mean cowboy music. When I was listening to it, it made me think of, like, y'all remember Pecos Bill and, like, those little books that you would get that would have the tape? Somebody had recorded the story so that you could listen to it in the car?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there was one version of the Pecos Bill story that the cassette was narrated by Robin Williams, and it was, like, the best. And Pecos Bill is a wild story, and I'm like, oh yeah, Western, Pecos Bill. And then Ryan reminds me that Disney already did a short on Pecos Bill, Johnny Appleseed, and John Henry.
Oh yeah, I do vaguely remember that.
So like, this could be a big old callback to those old shorts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the goofy one I suggested is pretty much something right out of A Merry Melodies, or as you guys suggested, the driving one is out of those instructional videos.
Mm-hmm. Basically trying to call back to Disney's, like, history a little bit here.
Yeah.
With some of these.
Another song that Lindsay sent to me was, oh gosh, what's it called now? Concierto de Aranjuez by Joaquin Rodrigo. And yeah, I almost want to put that in as the cowboy music. But I think now, hearing your premise for the piece, I think the initial rodeo thing that you mentioned might be a better fit.
Yeah. The Joaquin Rodrigo Concierto, that came out after the Spanish Civil War, and he had some feelings about Francisco Franco, and yeah.
And Generalissimo Francisco Franco was still dead.
Yeah, it's a sad piece. Whereas Rodeo Four Dance Episode is actually pretty fun.
I think that's another reason I like Fantasia 2000 more, is that a majority of the pieces are a lot more upbeat.
Yeah, though I also would like to keep a bit of the grandeur of classical music.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I was very much I love both of those movies. The only problem I ever had with 2000 is I don't like the bits in between the songs.
I like some of them.
I didn't care for most of them. It's a little too much.
I like the James Earl Jones one.
So I guess in that respect, I think you could have one person, one comedian or someone, be like
John Mulaney.
We were going through all the YouTube videos, we kept on getting ads for the Masterclass series, and it was always the Steve Martin stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
That actually makes sense, because Steve Martin's an actual musician, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, you could have, like, a two-man thing with, like, John Mulaney and Steve Martin. I think that would be a cool thing. Kind of bridge the gap a little bit.
I mean, I like the interludes where it was, like, talking about some of the history of the show, or they're just funny bits, but sometimes it's just, like, so self-aggrandizing, like, look at the amazing, majestic power of Disney! And I'm Penn and Teller, and we're gonna do the same thing we always do. The Penn and Teller bit dragged.
Yeah, I think if you're gonna talk about the grandeur of anything, it should be about the actual music.
Yeah.
But again, the best one was the James Earl Jones piece.
I think my problem is I just don't remember it.
He introduces Carnival of the Animals.
Okay, yeah.
And so it makes a lot of sense that for this Fantasia, they chose Carnival of the Animals. And we finally answer the age-old question, what is man's relationship to nature? And then someone hands him a note like, oh, sorry. Finally answer that age-old question, what happens when you give a yo-yo to a flock of flamingos?
Okay, no. Who wrote that this? That is good.
It's a very important question.
When you think about it, aren't we all a flamingo with a yo-yo?
Yep.
So what's your guys' next piece?
So I was thinking that there's never really been a piece that really featured vocal performances very prominently. And the thing about classical music is that kids generally aren't that exposed to opera. And I thought it would be cool, like, if we could structure this, like, say this was a feature-length thing. Not too long, but, like, you do a quote-unquote intermission, kind of like at actual live performances. But during that intermission, you have, like, a bunch of opera singers show up and demonstrate what the different voice types are like. And then it leads into a piece that is based on an opera, and this is an idea that's been banging around in my head and apparently banging around a bunch of Disney animators' heads, because there was a scrapped idea for a Ride of the Valkyries piece. That one does have sopranos singing in it. Big time sopranos, because if you're going to sing in a Wagner opera, you have to be able to sing over a full orchestra.
Yeah, you don't want a bass like me.
No, they got basses, but they can project. So yeah, the general premise is actually very simple. It is Brunhilde and the Valkyries taking part in a wild hunt.
So you're just adapting what the opera is about itself?
Yeah.
In a sense, yes.
Like, it's not that long of a piece. It's like 6.5 minutes.
Okay.
But the main focus is going to be on the voices themselves. Because for the most part, you hear Ride of the Valkyries just as the da 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 da.
Like, you think
as helicopters fly over Vietnam.
Yeah, you think of Apocalypse Now, but also that also had the parts with the voices in it. Let's not forget, like, once they're actually over the area, like, you can hear the voices, the singing. Which also very terrifying.
But can you remember the lyrics?
It's actually really simple. It's like the Valkyries cackling and then they start talking about the plot. But it's also all in German, so.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Germans will get it. Yeah. Anyways, Tanner, do you have another piece?
I do have another piece. At least I should. Oh, right. Miserloo.
Oh, which one's that?
That's Surf Rock, baby.
Oh.
Pump it louder! Pump it louder! So Miserloo has a long and storied history because it started as a folk song from the Mediterranean area, Mediterranean Egyptian type area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Eastern Mediterranean.
Yeah. And so it first came over to Western audiences as just a folk song, and then it was reorchestrated a little bit by Nick Rubanus, who added some other instruments in there, but for the most part kept all of it the same.
Yeah.
And so that's the one that I kind of want to use, but on the other hand, we can go with the Dick Dale cover, and that's the one where it got turned into surf rock and became the basis for all surf rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really depends if we want a little bit longer, slower piece or a shorter, quicker piece.
Yeah, because it would also depend on what run length we're looking at, unless we're going with the pure streaming thing.
Well, it's only a 2-minute difference, so it really does come down to what kind of vibe. Because if you're going for the slower one, I was thinking it's like a beach at sunset where there's just some surfers casually going, but it's mostly... This would basically be more of something in line with Pastoral Symphony, where it's just people chilling, and there's a beach and there's surfers.
Yeah, kind of like the beach scene in, or the surf scene in Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, something like that, where it's a lot more of a relaxed surf scene.
Yeah.
If we were to go with the Dick Dale version, it would be Hey Hey from Moana trying to surf.
Yeah. Or it could be like a really intense surfing competition, like out of Blue Crush.
Yeah. Well, the only thing is that it has to be a really simple thing because it's only 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like, this would essentially be Fantasia 2020's Carnival of the Animals, okay, where it just goes really quickly. It's very simple, and it's here, and it's fun, and it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it also breaks up what's considered traditional classical music. Woo!
Woo!
I'm just trying to think of a animation team to put onto that. Do you think that could be like a Pixar piece?
Maybe, but I had another idea for something that could also be a Pixar piece. Something else, a different number.
Oh, why not go into that?
Okay, well, it's actually using a song that Lindsay sent to me later on. So I don't know if this made your guys' final cut for the playlist.
Not really.
But it was The Battle on Ice by Alexander Nevsky, Opera 78.5. I don't know what these numbers mean.
Alexander Nevsky's the name of the movie that it's from.
Okay.
It's a Soviet film. The guy who wrote it was Sergei Prokofiev.
Okay. Well, the number is called The Battle on Ice.
Yeah.
But the vibe I got from it, because after you get through like a little 2 or 3 minute overture kind of thing, like, it has kind of a similar vibe as Ride of the Valkyries, but it's in a key that makes it sound a bit spookier. And mm-hmm. also there's this little kind of chugga 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 noise that you can hear in the background. Yeah. So I'm like, what if this is kind of like the little engine that could, but also there is an evil train that the Lindel engine is trying to get away from.
Oh no.
So actually, now that I say it out loud, what if this was like the Firebird Suite, but everyone's trains?
What you described is the plot to the Thomas the Tank Engine in the movie.
Oh no!
Look, this sounds better than Starlight Express, so yeah.
This is Starlight Express.
Oh, no!
This is the backdoor pilot for
Get out! Get out! I want out!
I can't leave! I can't get my roller skates on fast enough! Anyways, Pixar could make the trains movie.
Yeah.
The trains number.
I dig it.
Sort of going with what Walt Disney had originally intended with this whole roadshow idea, where you would have new stuff kind of transition out the old stuff, bring some classics back once in a while. We thought about, okay, so how about we have two pieces from the previous two movies? And what would they be? And we came to the conclusion of Rite of Spring and Pomp and Circumstance. How do you feel?
I agree with Pomp and Circumstance. Okay. Because Reblog If You Cry Every Time, that one always gets me. when Daisy and Donald don't realize that each other are alive, and then they're reunited at the end.
Yeah.
Are they gonna make it?
Ah, they made it!
But also, I tear up at a lot of Fantasia 2000 pieces. I tear up at Beethoven's Fifth. I tear up near the end of Rhapsody in Blue. I'm probably a mess during the entirety of the one that's set to Steadfast and Soldier.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Pomp and Circumstance, I agree, bringing that one back from Fantasia 2000. But I was thinking that we should bring back Night on Bald Mountain from the original, and mainly just because it is so iconic. Like, it's reached a level similar to Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I mean, they have used the Balrog as a bad guy and other stuff, so...
Yeah.
Well, Chernabog, not yeah. just a Balrog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Balrog's from Tolkien.
Yeah.
I guess... The only reason I didn't really suggest Night on Bald Mountain, even though I would absolutely put it in there, was because I didn't want it to, like, overshadow everything else.
Okay.
Because, like, it's an incredible piece,
but it might overtake everything else. Are people like, oh, I just want to get to night. When's night on Ball Mountain or something? It's like, you don't want that. But yeah, like,
you don't want the I'm just here for Godzilla reaction.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I get that.
It's like, it's weird, but like, I would put Night on Bald Mountain in the case of like, it's just really good. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. No, I get what you're saying.
Like, there is a reason why they put it at the end of the damn thing for the first one.
Yeah.
It's a really good ender.
It's also why I didn't want to put the Firebird Suite in it, because it would also,
yeah,
again, same deal, so powerful that it might overtake everything else before you get to the end.
Absolutely. And so here's another reason why I want to put Night on Bald Mountain in, is because if that's the penultimate number, then it does transition very well into what you guys were planning for the finale.
This is true.
Okay. I guess we could do that.
So Lindsay, what was the finale that we came up with?
Well, actually, Ryan, this is all you.
Oh yeah, it is. So this one I actually thought of the first time I heard it, because when I first heard this piece on its own, it made me cry. That, oh, wow, being Gustav Holst's Saturn, the bringer of old age from the planets. And because I wanted to do a piece from the planets, because they're all fucking just incredible pieces. Like, the easy man's choice would be to do Mars, but like,
yeah, that's kind of a given.
It's too easy. It's too easy. So the other options are like Venus and Jupiter and all that, but Saturn was the one that really, like, I could get a visual of what I wanted. And my original idea was, like, if I had it my way, I would do a Fantasia that was just all the planets.
Oh, that would be
cool. And it would be, like, this ballet of the stars. So what I kind of, like, boiled it down to was with Saturn, which is also Holst's favorite piece from the planets, was the life and death of a star. Like, it at the end of its life cycle. So it is about to go, like, supernova. And it's, in a sense, resisting that. It's rejecting, no, I don't want to go. I'm not ready. And for most of the piece, for, like, the first, like, 6 minutes, it's this struggle to keep this star's form. And maybe it would be kind of represented as, like, a person. I kept having this visual of a woman as this star, and just, like, she's old and, like, haggard from eons of existence, and now the time has come for her to move on, but she's not ready. And eventually, after the first 6 or so minutes of resisting and almost feeling the space crushing around her, she eventually almost like she's going through the stages of grief. And finally she reaches that point of acceptance that this is what has to happen, and then reaches this dream state of her remembering when she was younger in the final 3 or so minutes of the song. Almost like she said, she's performing to the audience this dance amongst the cosmos of, like, these gas giants and galaxies surround her as she dances by herself. and then the final visual being of her now, and her form is being overtaken by light. And she slowly lets loose all the energy that was built up within her as she goes supernova.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I tear up thinking about it.
You tear up every time you start thinking about this.
It's like, God, I want to make that. Because it would also be a contrast to the previous two enders of them being this very, like, in comparison, much more bombastic. Very loud and proud, let's say. And Saturn is such a quieter and reserved piece. And yet you can still understand that, like, this is the piece of someone at the end of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to an accepting point of, it's my time to move on. In a sense, accepting the fact that you're already gone. But I think it would be a cool visual to go along with that. The stars are really cool too. So, like,
yes. That's a good spot to wrap it up, both in terms of the film and this episode.
Whew.
So we're going to give Ryan a moment to compose himself.
Oh, I got the vapors. All right, I'm good.
And meanwhile, we're going to go over to a friendship promo.
Man, to know what the podcast is about.
You got it, stupid wizard character. All My Fantasy Children is the newest podcast on the One Shot Podcast Network.
Great network!
All My Fantasy Children is a tabletop character creation, storytelling, and world-building podcast powered by you.
You mean me?
Each week, hosts Jeff Stormer and Eric Catano-Saez take a listener-submitted prompt and, using some of their favorite tabletop RPGs, spin them into an original fantasy character, populating a shared universe, one story at a time. So become a junior wizard and join us every Friday wherever you get your podcasts or at allmyfantasychildren.com.
My turn. From worlds beyond to right at the gaming table. These are all my fantasy children.
Bum, 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 bum.
Where's my closing music? I hate this show.
So, Ryan.
Yes.
Where can you be found on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, at Vagabond Haunted. I swear I'm going to do podcasts again. I actually, today, just uploaded a new show, actually, with me and Seth, called SNR Radio, where we talk about music. So,
nice.
Hilariously on point with this whole episode about music.
Oh, yeah. Lindsay, how about you?
I'm on Twitter at LindsayM476. That's Lindsay spelled with an A, and you can get to all my other social media bullshits from there. Tanner, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SparkyUpstart and on Instagram at SparkyYoungUpstart. And you can also find this very podcast on Twitter at NIIRYFPod. Those are the letters for Not If I Reboot You First, and they're pronounced doot 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 doot
doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot
doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot
doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot doot
Yeah, and you can find them at CornerPodNet on Twitter. You can also email us at notifireabootyoufirst@gmail.com. You can send us your comments, critiques, criticisms, or your favorite classical movement. You could even ask to be a guest, unless you're a sibling, in which case you just appear spontaneously.
Yeah.
If you do, though, make sure you send us a hint instead of the entire idea, because we do like being surprised. If you'd like to support us financially, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/notifireabootyoufirst, but you really shouldn't be doing that at this time because we don't need the money. There's other people who need the money more. You can also rate and review us on your podcatcher of choice, and if you can't find us on your podcatcher of choice, then contact me and I'll try and get us in there. Last but not least, our cover art, as always, is by Alex, a.k.a. Pachu, and her work can be found on ptchew.com. And our theme music is done by our friend Sean Clake, and you can contact us to find out how to contact him if you'd like music of his own for your own. Lindsay.
Tanner.
Ryan.
Tanner.
Would either of you like a hint for next week?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well, okay, bye, Ryan. Lindsay, next week we're doing the exact same thing.
Like today's episode? What?
Yeah, the only difference is that we're throwing out everything that we've talked about and replacing it with Nicolas Cage.
Okay, then.
So, yeah, we'll be talking about that next week, but not if we reboot you first.
Bye.
How many Sopranos does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I don't know.
One. She just holds it and waits for the world to revolve around her.
Nice burn.
How many Altos does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I don't know.
One, but there has to be a Soprano there for her to say, "Isn't that a little high for you?"